Okay, this is the Knights Party Roundtable, and I'm Thomas Robb.
I'm Jason Robb.
I'm Brendan Warner.
And today is August 19th. We got a couple guests here with us today.
Yes.
And who are these guests today?
Caleb.
And what's your last name, Caleb?
Rob.
Rob. Got to speak up loud so people can hear you.
Rob.
Rob. Awesome. Great name. And what's the next one who we have?
Tayton Rob.
All right. That's right. Well, those are two of my boys.
Yeah.
Caleb and Tayton. And so they're joining us this part of this hour.
Correct. And this will probably be the most quiet they'll be all day long.
I bet so.
Because they'll just sit here and listen and maybe learn. But they might interject a thought. They do that sometimes.
Yes.
But they'll be more quiet than they will be once they leave the room. Because then they'll go back to being a child mode.
Right.
And be noisy again.
Right.
Outside.
Well, they for the most part, they do listen when, of course, our family have always talked about racial politics and discourse as far as what's going on with our people. And so they pick things up all the time. And I thought it was cute. Yesterday, we were on the couch, me and Caleb, and there were, I think Tayton may have been there, and I had the news on, and Caleb said, "Dad, are you watching fake news?" So I thought that was kind of cute, you know. So they pick up things, you know.
And favorite. So were you?
Kind of, because they were talking about Trump, and then they started talking about the things that's going on with him and firing Steve Bannon and then some of the other things. But he just said, "So, Dad, you're watching fake news." I said, "Yeah, well, I'm watching fake news, you know, but I still got to kind of see what the fake news is saying, you know."
Right.
So anyway, I thought that was funny, but very insightful. So,
speaking about Steve Bannon, they said that he actually turned his resignation in 2 weeks ago. And they were going to announce it last week, but then the Charlottesville thing occurred.
Uh-huh.
But one of the people on the TV said that Steve Bannon said right from the beginning. Said right from the beginning that he would only be with the administration for 8 to 10 months. So they said for him to leave now really isn't that surprising because that's all he intended to be there anyway.
Uh-huh.
And that he has now gone back to Breitbart News.
Right.
And so, but I don't know. Steve Bannon was kind of the voice of a populist uprising in the country. And so.
Well, I read one news report yesterday, and I think the reporter hit it kind of on the button. She said that with Steve Bannon being in the office, there was such a backlash from your traditional conservatives, you know, whatever that is anymore, but your Republicans, the traditional conservatives, and they were just thinking that Trump was just doing and echoing everything that Steve Bannon was telling him. And they said that, and the reporter basically at the very end of this article basically said, "So when Steve Bannon leaving, is this going to really change the policy of Donald Trump?" And her opinion was, "Well, no, it's not going to change the opinion.
Policy was what he ran out of the
beginning." Exactly. And so that's always going to be his policy. And actually, they said it might help him get more of his stuff moving, because now there's not a spotlight on the boogeyman in the back of the room, you know, Steve Bannon. He's gone. He's still in favor of Trump, obviously, and still going to be criticizing the left. But now the spotlight is not on Steve Bannon. Now it's going to be on Donald Trump, where now there's no one to blame, you know. And because they try to make it as if the left always makes Republicans and conservatives as if they are dumb and stupid. And that's how they try to show Donald Trump is that he's just a stupid guy. Steve Bannon is pulling all the strings, and that he just doesn't know what he's doing.
There are some conservatives who do have one of those educations.
They do have one of those
educations.
There are
some who do
right
have an education. And they're in the White House. Some of those educated people.
Educated people.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, I'm, of course, mocking the left a little bit, of course. That's a good point. That's a good point that Steve Bannon was kind of the lightning rod, what you're saying, or what they were saying. And now the lightning rod is going to be Donald Trump. So he'll say, no, this is my policy, rather than four, they're just trying to shift it to Steve Bannon.
Right.
So.
And, of course, now, Steve Bannon, I've read a couple things where he said, yeah, he's going to be going back, taking over Breitbart News again. And he's going to be going all attack on the Republicans mainly, those that are really, not your conservatives, neoconservatives and the globalists. He's going to go after them. And of course the left, and he's still going to be assisting Donald Trump because a couple of the major donors in Breitbart News are also really good friends with Donald Trump. And so this idea that Donald Trump is just going to change his policy, he's not going to change his policy. He's going to continue on what he's always done. And, I mean, he didn't have to make those statements about the Charlottesville, Virginia.
Oh, the beautiful monuments.
About the beautiful monuments. He didn't have to make those statements at all. I mean, that's a bold statement.
Yeah.
People don't realize it, but that is a very bold statement.
Yeah. And they hate him for it. They hate him. And well, speaking about Charlottesville, that happened a week ago today. And overall, we support the concept of what happened in Charlottesville. Both people defending the Robert E. Lee Monument. They were there to have a peaceful demonstration. For some of the characters that were there, we may not be our favorite characters or necessarily even feel too comfortable with them. But overall, it was to be a peaceful demonstration.
Because the concept was we don't want you to remove the Robert E. Lee statue.
Right.
Because basically you're trying to destroy our culture and our heritage. I mean, mainly that's what the spotlight was. And there was various groups and organizations. There was groups that were not what you would call racialists, just so-called patriotic or conservative, so they were not even racialists, the groups that were there. But the idea was, why are you trying to take down our monuments? Why are you trying to destroy our culture?
Right. And then Trump then was hammered because he's made reference that there were good people that were caught up into in a rally, on the neo-Nazi side. They'll just label them all neo-Nazis. And he says some of them were good people, and then they hammered him for that, said, you're not a good person, you associate with neo-Nazis. I think to myself, really? I mean, a political ideology makes you whether you're a good person or a bad person. And this may be too much for people to conceive and understand. If the neo-Nazis, or those who are neo-Nazis, really believe that Hitler killed 6 million Jews and were campaigning to do the same thing, then you can say maybe they're evil.
Okay? Right.
But if they honestly don't believe that he's guilty of killing Jews, then in their concept, it's a political ideology. It has nothing to do with mass killing, genocidal of Jewish people.
Exactly.
And but they want to make it look like that everybody who's at that rally would be advocating the gassing of Jews.
Right.
And there's how could a good people be at that rally? And yet in the white nationalist movement or the Christian patriotic movement or Christian nationalism, there's lots of housewives and soccer moms and teenage people and young couples and children and so on. They want to portray everybody in the white nationalist movement. I think like that term, I'm not even sure I like the term, but we keep using it. As a big old 6 foot brute Nazi skinhead, or just the guy ready to go into a fight. And a lot of the images they show there in Charlottesville were that kind of a person because they went there, the Antifa, as they call them, the communists, Black Lives Matter, they said and been posting they're going to come there, they're going to fight, they're going to drag those people off their staging area, they were going to beat them to the ground, they were going to have blood on the streets, they were going to do everything they can to shut down the rally. And so, as a result, the people went to the rally, went prepared to defend themselves.
Yeah, they weren't going there to create violence, to start violence. They were there to defend themselves, to be at a place where they had a lawful permit, and they knew they were going to be attacked by these extremists, these anti-white terrorists. And that's what they should be called. They're anti-white terrorists. They were there purposely to cause disruption and to try to hurt people and maim people.
Right.
And, you know, we knew people that went there and these terrorists, these white, anti-white terrorists, they were throwing bottles and bags of urine and gas and other poisonous stuff in these bottles at the white crowd. And they were intentionally there to cause violence, you know. And so it really sickens me when they say white nationalists were there to try to cause problems. They weren't there to cause problems at all.
But it's always pointed out, there they were. They had a shield. They had helmets. They came there for a fight. They came there prepared to fight.
Exactly.
Just like a police officer goes out to the street with a gun and bullets and an armored vest. He's not going out to fight. But if he gets in a fight, he wants to defend himself.
Right, absolutely.
And that's what happened to these people. But they're portraying it as if they came down there for the purpose to engage in a fight. But the thing is, the images you see on the screen of helmeted tough guys, because they were there, you know, they didn't, wives and kids didn't come and so on, is not the image of the Christian patriotic, white nationalist, racial nationalist, whatever kind of name you want to use,
right,
movement. Because there are many housewives and families and children and young people and young families that are involved, and they represent the movement, not the ones you saw at the rally in Charlottesville. Not that those people, I'm not saying did anything wrong or looked bad, but it's bigger than what they were.
Right.
The picture of white nationalism is much larger than the little small images they gave of guys defending themselves at the rally.
Well, I thought it was funny because, you know, of course, with fake news, you know, the media, I saw one article yesterday, and I just started laughing because at first the report was the alt-right, you know, and they used some of the names. But this article was, this is what really started making me laughing. It was neo-Nazis, KKK, and skinheads. And I'm thinking, skinheads, they haven't been around for like 20, 30 years. Yeah. But I guess skinheads are now showing up at rallies now too. So now it's just not a pro-white crowd, is now like neo-Nazis, KKK, and skinheads.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was kind of humorous because they had to throw the skinheads in there too. Everybody says, let's throw whatever names we can.
The skinheads were phenomenal back in the 90s, maybe early 2000s.
And the 80s and late 70s.
Yeah.
I mean,
but,
so,
you know,
but I just thought it was funny because, okay, let's just drag up any negative name you want to try to think of and just throw it out there.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I always thought was really funny, you know. I will say one good thing is that, you know, with this rally and of course the aftermath of it, now you have these anti-white terrorists who are now going around and they're destroying statues. I mean, they're vandalizing them. And I think that's a good thing from the standpoint, white people are now starting to realize that's what these people are. They're anti-white terrorists. And
well,
I think that's a good thing.
Part of the reason they feel emboldened is because all your conservative people on Fox News and all your conservative talking heads, they all came in, and none of them really were, all of them were afraid. Let me rephrase it. All of them were afraid to point out that the anti-white protesters were anti-white protesters.
Right.
They talked as if they were just innocent citizens who were sieged upon by the neo-Nazis, and none of them really pointed out that this was a communist element of Antifa and Black Lives Matter and other World Workers Party and communist revolutionary groups. These people were the enemies of freedom and enemies of liberty, enemies of the white race. They were there to shut down the rally, and yet none of your talking heads, conservative talking heads, point that out. All of them want to point out and show their displeasure and their hatred for the neo-Nazis that were at the rally, as they call them. And this really sent a message, as far as I can see, it's a message to all these communist elements that they've been given cover, in a sense,
right,
by conservatives even. Because everybody's afraid of being a racist. So anybody who implies that they're or can be accused of being a racist is hammered upon, And so they've kind of given cover to give him permission and kind of sent a message that there are no allies within the conservative element branch of the movement. And so, and then you have, because of that, they embolden them and the statues being taken down. They don't rely upon or wait for the city to make a declaration or the city council to make a declaration. Their mobs just go and pull them down, you know, themselves, right. Ropes and so on.
Now, Brennan, did you see anything on the news or read anything that sparked your interest or?
Well, Brennan don't have a TV in the past weeks.
My TV. I'm waiting for my TV and my.
Yeah, but he's on the internet. But made comment or anything that you may have saw or read or anything like that sparked your memory of South Africa with apartheid, where they were destroying the monuments
definitely.
And stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, I thought about it, and I grew up in a revolution in South Africa, you know. I understand how these things work. I understand how terrorism works, you know, rallies and so forth. In Africa, things are done a little differently. There are things in Africa that happen no one will ever know of. You know, when someone has a political issue, it's usually a bomb or a bullet, you know.
Right.
That's the way Africa works. You know, but I don't think that, you know, just listening to you talk earlier about people that, you know, are in a movement for life, it's not something that happens overnight. It's not something that, I mean, with the resistance movements in South Africa, you know, it wasn't something that happened overnight, building them up. I mean, and to get what they wanted, to eventually getting, you know, I believe in 99 when I last heard, you know, the white resistance held 2 seats in parliament. You know, they got some political say. But America is not far off, you know, from a revolution, I don't think.
Right.
Maybe 20, 30 years,
sure.
You know. But it'll happen.
Yeah.
People just need to realize, you know, what's at stake.
And I think what people don't understand, they're talking about, you know, a revolution, you know, it could be a physical revolution, it could be a political resolution, which is all the same thing. But ultimately, it's when you're seeing a country that is becoming a non-white country. And of course, in Africa, South Africa, you know, with apartheid and when they obviously became where the non-whites were controlling, you know, the parliament and the government, you know, those same communist organizations, you know, the worker party organizations and stuff like that, that we see in America now protesting these white events, white nationalist events, these rallies. Those are the same people that were in Africa, South Africa.
It's like how I say it's a blueprint. It's a blueprint for what happened, what's happening in Europe, what's happened in South Africa. 20 years ago when I left South Africa and came here, you know, I told people what were going to happen, and it wasn't a matter of them wanting to, you know, lock the door and throw away the key. They would have welded the gates on me. I mean, people, I told them this Rainbow Nation... It's not going to work. Diversity
and safety. You're insane, Brandon.
Doesn't work together well.
Right.
You can't have per se 10 people on one side and 5,000 people on another side share equal power.
Right.
It cannot work.
Right.
It's impossible.
Right.
And that's
the laws of physics.
Right.
Two things cannot occupy the same place at the same time.
And, you know, people believed this. People were brainwashed and people believed it. They believed this Rainbow Nation was going to be this wonderful, we were going to all get along. And now you have whites, you know, in squatter camps that are educated. They just can't work because things have progressed from the affirmative action and the equal opportunity employer to progresses and gets worse and worse. And it's like when you're around a puppy all the time, you don't notice the puppy. But if you were to not see that puppy for 6 months and come back, all of a sudden, say, well, that's how it happens, you know, politically. It happens very slowly, and it grows in front of your eyes. You just don't see it until it's a big monster, and then...
And unfortunately, like in South Africa, like here in the United States, every generation is conditioned. They accept it without even thinking about it.
Right.
And so, yeah, you have another white generation, let's say in South Africa, who is growing up post apartheid, and to them it's like, well, this is how it's always been. I mean,
yeah, in but to use your metaphor, right. It's always been a big puppy.
Right? Yeah, it's always been a big puppy, right. and we've always lived in this like kind of melting pot. Right. And yeah, there's white squatter camps, you know, where there's hundreds and hundreds of white South Africans that are living there because they basically have lost their jobs because of this right. new government. But to them, it's like, well, that's always how it's been. Right. I mean, in their mind, you know, I know they're aware of the past, but it's like they never were personally involved in that. And so now it's like they grow up, they kind of accept it, you know, right. and they don't know they live in a sewage.
Right. And it rightfully belongs to them. You know, people right. will say all day long about Australia and America, about the Aborigines and the Indians. But in South Africa, it wasn't until 120 years after the arrival in 1652 of the Dutch that the first black was spotted.
Right.
You know, the country was made by white men and women, you know.
Right.
And it belongs to the white man in South Africa, but they've given it away.
Yeah, give it away.
They've given it away.
Okay, James, I think our two extra correspondents here are ready to go do something else.
So, Tate and Caleb, it was nice having you here. You can go out and you can find us some more stories, okay? Okay. So, we'll see you guys.
Are you going to say bye?
Bye.
Okay. So,
you know, and you know, with what you were saying about the South Africa, and I think you really, you know, about being a blueprint, I mean, I think that's definitely true because you're seeing the same thing in America now, and especially with all these monuments, you know, basically Confederate monuments that are being destroyed, and they're not even waiting for city councils anymore. They're just going down and tearing them down and spray painting. And I think what's happening is that, like you said, you know, that now they almost have gotten a free pass. They'll just go in and destroy these monuments. But I think it's somewhat of a good thing because we always know that God is going to use everything for his glory and for his honor. And what you're seeing is you see these anti-white terrorists, they're no longer going after just your Confederate monuments. They're going after any monument whatsoever that has any inclination of being a white person.
Even Abraham Lincoln. The emancipator was
defaced
and so forth. Was in Chicago?
It was in Chicago. It was not considered a national monument. It was a statue that had been there for a very long time. And it almost became like a monument itself. But yeah, they defaced Abraham Lincoln and said he was a racist because he didn't do enough to help the blacks. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, what? I mean, don't they even know their history? Yeah. You know, but they don't care because he represents a white, strong Christian man. You know, I know there are people can argue on that, but that's in their mind. That's what that is. They removed the United States Supreme Court justice in Maryland, Taney, just a few days ago because he wrote the opinion of Dred Scott opinion. And so Teddy Roosevelt and of course George Washington and Jefferson. I mean, now they're just going after any monument that's there's a white person.
And they will go after the American flag. Because the American flag represents the white power structure.
That's what
America.
I was just gonna say, Pastor Rob. Yeah. You know, there are videos you can find on YouTube of these non-white extremists in Harlem, New York, where there were a few of those, where they placed the American flag on the ground, and
right.
most of them choose to walk over it. Some yeah. will avoid it,
yeah.
but most, and it's filmed,
yeah.
and you know, it's going to be like South Africa, like Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe, the flag changing, the national anthem changing.
We need a new flag to represent America as it is today.
Well, and the reason they hate America, because we always say this all the time, is the Confederacy was only in existence for
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
The United States, you know, ever since its foundation, is considered a racist government to them, yeah. you know, before the Confederacy and after the Confederacy. And to them, the United States is the epitome of racism, you know, just from very inception.
It's like, I may have the facts a little bit off here, but it's like when they changed the Georgia state flag here a couple of years ago, took off the Confederate symbol off the flag, and they put down the old Georgia flag. And somebody remarked, well, the old Georgia flag actually flew over a state that endorsed slavery.
Right.
You know, so what did they really gain, you know?
Well, yeah, because they said, well, the new Georgia flag was created, I think, like 1956 or something like that.
Right.
So we need the old Georgia flag. And they're thinking, okay, well, that old Georgia flag, like you said.
Actually flew over slavery. So,
Foster, Rob, yesterday at the National Headquarters of the Knox Party, we had the international documentary film crew that came there.
Right.
I remember the one of the guys asking you about, do you believe there'll be a race war? And you said, we're in one right now. We're just fighting it differently. How did you explain that?
Well, we're in a race war. It's being fought in the courts. It's being fought in the schools. You know, it's being fought in all our institutions, magazines, newspapers. They all are hammering white people, promoting
public opinion.
Creating public opinion. So public opinion in itself creates self-censorship. So now people will be out in the public area. They're afraid to say anything that might be interpreted racist because they don't know who's going to be standing next to them, or their coworker, or customers are afraid, so they self-censor themselves because of this race war. And, you know, race war might not necessarily be fought with bullets yet, but it's still being fought. And right now we're losing. And so this is why the defacing the monuments, in a sense, is good, because it helps elevate the narrative. It helps elevate it. People say, hey, yeah, this is real. This is really happening.
Well, like you've always said, Dad, I mean, you've said that politics is war fought during the time of peace. And that is definitely true. There's no difference between political parties, ideologies fighting each other, except you're not having guns or swords, you know, vice versa. You're kind of speaking it out, talking, swaying public opinions. But when you start having that being torn away, and you're having these anti-white terrorists that are going around now physically assaulting people, it potentially could get to that point. But that is happening, again, that is happening in your non-white major cities. You know, I mean, basically, these major non-white cities are basically a different country. And that's what people don't understand. When you go into L.A., you're going to Chicago like that, there's white people around. It's controlled. The government's controlled by non-whites. They're anti-white. All these major cities. So you're going to a different country.
Right.
And that's what people don't understand. You go into a predominantly white town, white suburbs. Yeah, you're still going to hang your traitors there. You're anti-whites. But the vast majority of people are still going to be your people. You're going to be your people that are sympathetic to you. And so that's why people don't understand that these major cities, they're almost like no-go zones for white activism, because of the fact that, well, first off, they're all non-white, so why would you even want to go in there to try to preach to them anyway, you know?
And if you do get arrested, you're into their system.
Absolutely.
And they're the enemy.
Yeah.
I'm totally convinced that if Al Sharpton, as an example, or Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, if they thought they could go out here and raise an army of a million soldiers, they wouldn't be worried about politics.
Right.
If they thought they'd get a million soldiers armed and equipped and ready for war, they'll be marching on the nation's capital to try to take over and raise a communist flag, whatever flag they want to have at the time.
Right.
So these people are not our friends. They're not just people with political opposition on where later sewer system or what kind of trade deal we're going to do with some foreign country. These people are
all-out white genocide.
They want to destroy any vestiges of our white history and heritage and culture and nation.
Now, since and of course everyone listening to this, they've seen all the statues being removed and destroyed and defaced. Now it's not a Confederate statues, and you know, I saw a thing yesterday that a bunch of Catholic priest statues are now being spray painted as in Black Lives Matter. So I mean, it's just the whole culture. This is destroying culture, and so. With that, I know, Dad, last day or two, you and Rachel at National Headquarters have done numerous interviews. And for our members out there that's listening, what were some of the interviews that you and Rachel had done last couple of days, because I know the last 2 or 3 days,
yeah,
it's just been busy. And of course, Brennan's been coordinating the media with you and Rachel. But for those listeners out there that may not be aware, what's some of the
There's some
reporters?
There's some smaller ones, but some of the big ones have been like CNN. Did an interview with them yesterday. Yahoo News did a story with them. British, Rachel did an interview with the British network. I don't know which one, but some of the Britain American affiliate here. We had Brazilian reporters here yesterday. We have some from Spain. We'll be here today. And like I said, numerous small ones. We did a news story with our local newspaper, Harrison Daily Times. And I haven't seen that story yet. But and we did numerous ones over the telephone, some here. So it's been very busy. And of course, this is what we do. Try to put a very positive image and impression in the minds of people about our cause and about White Christian Revival.
Well, and I know a couple days ago on the NBC Nightly News, they had a part of their broadcast was about how some of the your tech companies are trying to do what they can to prevent white nationalist, white racialist groups to be on the internet. And they had three pictures, and the center picture was one of the Knights Party website, you know. So because the Knights Party, KKK.com, is a very, very popular white racialist website. And so that is something that I thought was pretty interesting, because they had three websites, and one of them, of course, was ours. But, you know, Brennan, you know, last couple days with all this media, you know, I know with you working at the national office, what were some of the things that you were doing as far as helping coordinate some of this?
Well, basically, I mean, we had, the local newspaper here, but then, you know, there were nationwide reporters from agencies, an Atlanta news anchor, I'm not sure if it was an anchor or
right.
a reporter from there, all wanted to either, you know, talk with Ms. Rachel Pendergraft, who's our national organizer, and Pastor Thomas Roberts, our national director of the Lions Body. And they wanted to get in touch with them and ask them, you know, questions. And they were calling from all over. And then there were international ones that had only, you know, the international cell numbers and had just been here at the time being. And, you know, we're trying to email back and forth, you know, with the right time to contact. And Pastor Rob and Ms. Rachel being on the phones, it's, you know, can I have to wait in line to get
right.
your turn? You know, but they were very interested in this outbreak, you know, what happened in Charlottesville.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of people that don't understand, white people themselves who've kindly so written some emails to the national office
right.
Telling them, you know, but like you said earlier, you know, we never went there. And I say we, not the Knights Party, but
right.
as a people, we never went there to look for a fight. Was to defend ourselves. I mean,
yeah.
I heard of some of the things, you know, they had solidified concrete or cement in pop cans and
yeah.
you know, mace and all these things to attack the white nationalists.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, well, a lot of people understand. I mean, again, I think what sets the Knights Party apart from your vast majority of your white racialist groups is that here are the headquarters. I mean, if just strategy-wise, as far as coordinating interviews, it's not easy.
It's not very hard.
Because it's, you know, you got reporters calling. They're trying to have
right.
a deadline.
Everybody's got a deadline.
Right.
Everybody's got a deadline, whether it's the newspaper or if it's going to be on the news itself, on TV. They have to have their deadlines, and everybody's trying to get the story ASAP.
Right.
And, I mean, you have to be on your toes and on your game.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Well, you know, and with that being said, Dad, you know, this morning before we started the show, you know, you had one person who had, I don't know if they called you or emailed you, and we only have about 10 minutes, 12, 10 minutes. So before we start talking about the Congress coming up, I kind of want to segue into this. The person said, now where do we go from here?
Yeah.
You know, and I think with our listeners, I think that's a good point. Where do we go from here? And to us, it's not, we already know where we're going from here. But for the vast majority of people that are not involved at headquarters, they're not involved in the day-to-day struggle in the white resistance movement.
They think this was a tipping point.
Right. So for a few minutes, what would you say, where do we go from here?
Well, you know, the struggle, first off, the struggle is long term. People have the idea that because something happens that grabs the news and it changes everything. And the struggle is long term. It's going to last, we don't know how much longer it's going to last. It's going to last 15, 20 years or longer. Balkanization is going on. Balkanization is a major point of what's happening. White people move to the heartland, major. The West Coast, East Coast could be majority non-white. There is this move to the heartland. There is the Balkanization occurring. There is the federal government becoming more fractured and more fractured. People need to realize this is going to be a long battle. It's not something that where we go from here. Well, we're going to rally next week and take over the White House week after. Is this a struggle that people need to be prepared for? Prepared for, like you mentioned earlier, like a psychological, it's a mental war too. People need to mentally be prepared to dig in and fight the long battle. That, of course, then involves into families, into children. People can't get the idea that they're fighting the battle for, and their children are to be left behind who will somehow just reap their benefits. Then you understand that children may actually be fighting the battle.
Exactly.
And so children need to be taught. And so often I don't see people really, really teaching their children. They think somehow the children are just going to learn by
osmosis.
And in a sense, that is important because they should learn by osmosis,
right?
Because the family should be a constant involvement of the family.
Well, that's how you learn by osmosis, right? And having your family around you 24/7 involved in this fight.
Yeah. So it's not just a dad sitting home and say, oh, there's a rally going to Charlottesville. Goodbye, kids, from family, and off he goes. It should be a daily struggle. And so they should concentrate on teaching their children. But that involves then what kind of image are you creating for your children? Are you creating a good family? Are you creating, in other words, if children are going to listen to you and learn from you, they have to respect you. You can't be a brute thug. You have to be somebody they can look to and respect and therefore listen to your words in your teaching and then evolve them, just like you having your children here earlier. You know, they sat here and they're very good, listened for 15 or 20 minutes, you know, and that's how they learn. Just the idea that you're going to sit them in a corner and say, all right, don't ever bring home the N-word. You don't marry an N-word.
A nagger.
Don't marry a nagger.
Don't marry a nagger.
Right. And that's not enough. That's not teaching, you know. So people really need to concentrate on that. Be prepared for a long battle. This isn't going to be over within the next few weeks or maybe a few months. It's not going to be over. It's going to be a long term. When the total racial awakening comes, it's going to come very quickly. We do need to be prepared for it. So,
and with that, I would say that now we're talking about balkanization, and what I have been saying, and I've been hearing other mainly immigration groups saying, is you're seeing what's called pockets of resistance. You're seeing pockets of resistance throughout really the Midwest, you know, the heartland of America, rising up where your vastly majority of white people are. But, you know, where we go from here, I would also say as an organization, as the Knights Party, this is something that we have known has going to have occurred 30, 40, 50 years. It's not something that is just kind of hitting our head and realizing now, oh, now it's happening. We knew it was going to happen. And with the Knights Party,
I can take the speeches I gave in the 80s and 90s saying They're going to go after a Confederate monument.
Right. And people are saying you're crazy.
Yeah, they're going to tear down every Confederate monument, every courthouse in every city in America, and then they're going to go after our national monuments, and they're going to go after the American flag. We've been saying that 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So what's happening doesn't come as a shock to us.
Right.
It's just basically revealing what we already knew was going to happen.
Right. And with the night story, we always look at the long-term goal. What's the long-term goal? We're not looking at the tree in front of the forest. We're looking at the forest. And so we know there's going to be skirmishes, battles here and there. And so our design, our program has always been the long-term goal. And at the Knights Party, that's why we have really, for the last several years, we have really focused on the headquarters. We have focused on our media relationships. We have worked hard on internet savvy as far as different internet sites. And then of course, we've been really getting just our physical structure in place, because we know as the Knights Party, we have to become the white resistance. And anyone who studies politics have to understand that if you really want to be successful in moving the direction of the crowd towards your beliefs, you have to be the center of that propaganda. You have to be the center of the voice of the resistance.
You gotta control the narrative.
And we, the Knights Party, believe that we have the correct program. We believe we have the correct path for that.
That's the white resistance. Christian-based. We're Christian-based.
We are Christian-based.
People within the white nationalist movement are politically-based.
Right.
And we're Christian-based, but still political is part of it.
Right.
But we're still Christian-based.
And that's why, you know, we've been really working hard last, you know, several years, really creating these grounds here, Soldiers of the Cross, being partnership with the Christian Revival Center, to create this atmosphere, create this grounds, this white family retreat, because we know we are getting to the times where families, white families, do not have a place to go to socialize, to meet together in a peaceful environment. And because you're not able to do that in your major cities anymore. It's harder to do that even in your white suburbs. And so we have created this place here.
I mean, for example, what luck do you think a group like ours would have going to Charlottesville, North Carolina, or Virginia,
right,
and renting a motel building, motel conference meeting?
Right.
Do you think that would happen?
No, definitely not.
In fact, I think you have a hard time anywhere in the country right now.
Right. And you would not want to make sure, you would not want, and sorry people, I have my little 2-year-old daughter here now, but you don't want your families in a situation where they could be harmed. And so we have the Knights Party Family Leadership Congress coming up on September 1, 2, and 3. And it is at a ground, a safe ground, peaceful grounds. It's out in the Ozark Mountains. You're not going to have to worry about anti-fa, communist, Marxist organizations. You're not going to have to worry about any of that. And this is something we knew was happening, you know, 30, 40 years ago. We knew that we had to create this place because we could see what was happening. We could see the trends. You know, like you said, Brendan, you know, South Africa. I mean, I remember even at that time, before even apartheid was destroyed there. I mean, we even saw, I remember in the United States, just seeing how this white civilization was being destroyed, you know, and I remember having conversations with, you know, my mom, dad, and family saying, what are those white families going to do now? Because we knew that it was a matter of time that you're seeing genocide right in front of you, you know, and you see these white now settlement camps out there. And we knew that was going to happen here in the United States. And we was like, we have to start making plans for that. We have to start create a place where white families are going to be able to come and meet and discuss the politics and the religion of the day. Because we knew it was not going to be safe, you know. And we see that happening now. And I think that's why it's important that people meetings like the Knights Party Family and Leadership Congress, people attend this event.
Yeah, and that's coming up September 1, 2, and 3. And like you say, this is a nice, safe area to bring children, to help children understand that it's more than just mom and dad or the crazy guy that comes over and visits mom and dad. I'm being crazy in quotation marks. That there are other people, good, ordinary, middle-class people who love their country and love their children and heritage, can come together. And so this is a family retreat to help strengthen people, help them build their resolve in the struggle. So it's very important. You can't get that by going to a rally. You need something really kind of a settled atmosphere for people to build up their strength. And so September 1, 2, and 3, very important. People need to mark your calendar, make plans to be there.
Yeah. Well, they can go to KKK.com. Or AmericanHeritageCommittee.com, and they can register for that event. Bring your spouse, bring your children. I always tell people, your grandparents, bring your grandchildren. It is a great 2-day event.
Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday.
Two and a half days. I know Brenda's been working really hard the last couple of weeks, getting the grounds all set up for that. And it's something that I always look forward to because we all need to be energized and charged up for that following year. And real, again, that's part of the long-term fight we're involved in.
Yeah. And it definitely is like being plugged into a rechargeable battery charger, you know, it mentally and spiritually charges you. And also, what I want to mention is that there are age-appropriate activities for, you know, children of different ages, like nature, trail hikes, and it's a private nursery for moms there, and I know. A lot of people don't know that. I know a few guys have come thinking it's going to be a guys thing, and they're like, "I wish I brought my family. I had no idea that you have a beautiful lit up playground." And
absolutely.
Well, it's a Knights Party Leadership and Family Conference, and so mark your calendar and come on out. You won't be disappointed.
Well, I believe that is all the all we have for today. Yeah. And I'll just appreciate everyone tuning in. And share this on social media. Let your friends and family know about this broadcast and about the organization. And if you have any questions, just simply you can go to KKK.com. And you can get a lot of information about the Knights Party and the activities we're involved in.
And if I could just mention one more thing. Another fun thing, Jason, like you're saying, with doing things and having the children participate, is when the seasonal crusader comes out, rolling those up as a family and distributing them in another neighborhood, a white neighborhood, that's always a fun thing to do, and the children always love getting involved with that.
Because people have to involve the children.
Yes, sir.
Get involved and understand the love of how they can develop real love for our people.
Yes.
And people can write videos, or they can watch read stories, about white heroes, Davy Crockett or King Arthur, the Round Table, or the Vikings. They make stories about our ancestors that will inspire our children.
Yes.
Because so often people act like we don't have a culture, like we're like void of any type of a culture. And so we have a wonderful culture to be proud of and a wonderful heritage to be proud of. So Jason had to leave the room with his little daughter. I think she had a dirty diaper, so... he won't be saying goodbye, but we'll say goodbye for him. And we're going to end up this broadcast right now. So this is Thomas Robb.
And I'm Brendan Warner.
And we're reminding you to love your God and love your people.